at Grindr, because it's hard to unionize when 46% of the staff have just walked off the job. So, yeah, but you're right. It is a little bit more of a labor rights issue than a gay one. But
I am all for labor unions, but I also understand that there are certain contexts where there are alternative modes of collective bargaining that are much more effective than forming a union, because forming a union can actually be counterproductive in some cases. Like, collective bargaining comes in a wide variety of flavors, and I don't think the tech industry is a good place for it. But again, that is a labor rights conversation, not really a queer issues conversation.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be jumping now to our next batch of songs, and that includes, let me just make a quick note here. I always kept thinking that the next one, you know what, I'm just gonna move my notes closer to me. Montreal by Ariane Moffat. Nice sprinkling of Canadian musicians in here, all from that time period. So Ariane Moffat as Montreal kicks off the next one. Then we have Sam Sparrow's Black and Gold, which I have actually just had on repeat all morning. And then Inside Out from Feist will be following that one. And then rounding out this particular segment of songs, we have Hop on a Plane by Tegan and Sarah. Because, of course, around that time, The Con came out. And The Con had a huge cultural impact on queer folks in Canada in the early 2000s. The Con being the name of the album.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, but it's good to, you know, let the audience in on the secret in case they don't know. Yeah,
absolutely. So coming up next, we have Ariane Moffat's Montreal, and then following that, as I mentioned earlier, Black and Gold, moving to Inside Out. Inside and Out by Feist, and then Hop on a Plane by Tegan and Sarah. We'll be back just after this.
Je reviens à Montréal, la tête gonflée de nuages. C'est le transit d'Amsterdam qui s'est chargé du glaçage. Et je reviens à Montréal, le corps tatoué de visage.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. We just heard some Tegan and Sarah. One of the lesser known tracks off of the album, The Con. So much of Tegan and Sara's album really went into some pretty heavy radio play. So we're giving this one a little bit of love and attention. Now, speaking of love and attention, there is a case. It is complicated, but we're going to try. There are a few different things happening in Europe. There is the European Union, the EU, within which a whole bunch of people are in that club, but not all of them.
Yeah.
There's also different, you know, various other treaties, like the European Convention on Human Rights, which has a whole bunch more people who are signed onto that one. For example, Britain left the club of the European Union, but they are still signed on to the European Convention of Human Rights. So when the European Court of Human Rights makes a decision, everyone who is signed on to the agreement has to sort of follow those agreements.
And famously, Norway follows all the regulations, does basically everything, except they're just not a member, and they don't feel like being one. And every time somebody asks them, they say, no, I'm not interested, stop asking. So, yeah, Europe is it's sort of an onion with like different layers of EU-ness. And actually, from what I understand, Canada's in the fourth layer. We're kind of like the cousins of the EU. You know, we're welcome to all the family gatherings, even though we're not really a member.
Yeah. No, I would say we are the EU's cousin's boyfriend or girlfriend. Okay. You know what I mean? It's, you know, everyone's always thrilled we're there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite a family connection. You know what I mean? It's like we are the significant other, literally.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I would describe the Canadian.
We'll show up to grandma's birthday party if we got time. If we don't make it, no one will be offended.
That's true. Yeah. That checks out.
That level of commitment. Yeah.
Where were we? Yes, Europe. So the European Court of Human Rights has been looking at a court case in Bulgaria. Now, Bulgaria, in the Bulgarian constitution, marriage is defined as between a man and a woman. Now, homosexuality isn't illegal in Bulgaria. There are a couple of little protections here and there, but they are nowhere near the equal rights that the rest of Europe holds, or Europe's Canada. So this human rights court case, the European Court of Human Rights, recently ruled not that Bulgaria has to now introduce gay marriage. There was a lesbian couple who got married elsewhere, moved back to Bulgaria, and the Bulgarian state refused to recognize their marriage, essentially. This happens a couple of times. But what they've said is, look, you have to come up with some kind of legal solution here so that the legal protections are equal, just the same way that your marriages that you make in Bulgaria are respected in France and in Germany and, you know, Norway. And likewise, the marriages in Norway, France, and Germany need to be respected under the same legal framework as everyone else in Bulgaria. This does actually apply to Bulgaria, Romania, as well as Russia and the Ukraine, although I'm not holding my breath on either of those getting around to any kind of work right now. But this, what I find really interesting about this decision is that it is very, very similar to another decision that was recently made in Hong Kong.
Now Hong Kong,
as you know, is not in Europe. They're not even cousins. They're not related. They're not dating. They have no connection.
They're Europe's cousins, divorced ex-wife.
Exactly, it's Britain's ex-wife. Like that's
sometimes
who it is.
Hang out with them, but they don't go to grandma's birthday party. But people still ask, like, "Well, how's Hong Kong doing?" Oh, that's nice to hear.
Absolutely.
We're getting in a weird metaphor here, but I'm into it all the way.
So the High Court in Hong Kong, there was the Court of Final Appeal just made a decision in Hong Kong. And it was about an activist there called Jimmy Sham, who is married elsewhere, got married to his husband, and was arguing that he had a constitutional right to have his marriage recognized in Hong Kong. However, that's, you know, obviously they've been denied, it's gone away all the way to the Court of Appeal. And that court has actually made a very, very, very similar decision to the European Court of Human Rights, in that they haven't said, look, Hong Kong, Bulgaria, you have to have gay marriage. But what they're saying is, if our marriages are being respected elsewhere, then marriages from elsewhere need to be respected equally within us. So they have both, you know, the Bulgarians now have to figure out some kind of legal framework. And likewise, the High Court in Hong Kong has instructed the city government of Hong Kong to also come up with some kind of legal solution that affords the same legal rights as everyone else. You know, it in no way is touching on the sanctimony of marriage and the sort of religious element of it, but rather it relates to the legal infrastructure that surrounds marriages when it comes to the state.
This actually is pretty related to a bunch of Canadian stories that came out at around the same time as the music that we're playing today.
Yeah.
So around 20 years ago, there was a big debate about same-sex marriage in Canada. And one of the things they came down to is, whether we call it marriage or not, we do need to have some kind of state-recognized secular union that is completely agnostic to the gender or sexual identity of the individuals entering that, and religious marriages, between big quotation marks, can be left to the churches. We're not going to interfere with that. Should we have Canadian same-sex marriage, or should we have civil unionships, which are identical in all ways and rights and tax breaks and visitation rights and benefits and inheritance and blah, blah, blah. And I remember actually a lot of people, because I'm old enough to remember, I remember the community, a lot of people were like, we don't care what you call it, just make it happen. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are like, there's no point in fighting for it if we don't get to call it marriage. There's a lot of Catholics who are gay and want to get married. So it was a debate back and forth. But a lot of, even the people who insisted on being called marriage, kind of landed on whatever you call it, so long as it happens. And I think that's
gay marriage just got in the dictionary.
So, Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we may have run out of time. Yep, we have a couple of songs left. We're actually going to be playing out now. This next artist is neither Canadian, nor do I believe is she gay. Okay. So a bit of an anomaly in the whole playlist today, but it's an earworm, very much of the time, and it's not quite Life or Life in terms of its role. It is Absolutely Everybody by Vanessa Amorosi. Is going to be one of the next songs. As soon as you hear it, you're going to be like, oh my God, it's that song. But yeah, dominated gay bars in for quite a while during this time period. Yeah, huge one. And then Boys Want to Be Her by Peaches will be rounding out.
I was going to ask, could you find a Peaches song that isn't filled with the swears? Because I love Peaches, but she is not radio friendly.
She is not radio friendly. She really need, like, I mean, it is the struggle is real. I mean, Peaches,
she never meant
come
to
on.
Be,
yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to be playing out with Boys Want to Be Her with Peaches, following Absolutely Everybody by Vanessa Amorosi. It's been a bit of a wild week. We'll be keeping an eye out on other LGBTQ news as it happens over the next week. I think we're going to get some guests lined up for future episodes as well. I have been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
the stars are concert halls. To you they crawl, body sprawls, smoking palm malls, close calls, stand tall, doll, you make them feel so small. And they love it! Yes, I do. The way you rock, non-stop. Girl, you got the chops. Flip-flop, she bops, self-taught. Your licks are hot. Her lyrics heave, kids receive. Crawling up the sleeve, parents peeve. Can't conceive that her deed will never leave.
Bird note. For most albatross species, raising a chick is a real challenge. Waved albatrosses produce such slow-growing, needy offspring that females lay only a single egg every 2 years, and both parents need to share the load until youngsters can hunt on their own. Albatrosses tend to pair for life, and it can take a while to find the right partner. So some species don't start breeding until they're 10 years old, with some individuals even waiting till they're 20. Reunited pairs go through an elaborate synchronized ritual of braying, wing spreading, and bill tapping to reaffirm their bonds before getting down to the business of breeding. In Hawaii, biologists were puzzled to find that some Laysan albatross pairs had not one, but two eggs. Then they found that some of the birds going so faithfully through the ritualized series of courtship displays were both female. Although the eggs were fertilized by males that had since died or were from other pairs, the females were bonded to each other. Many of these female couples remain together for years. They can't successfully raise both offspring, but their combined efforts are necessary to raise one chick. For Bird Note, I'm Wen Fei Tong.